This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show, getting hired even in a recession. Whether you're job hunting, fearful of losing your job, wanting a better job, or have a friend or family member who needs a job, now seems like an abysmal time to be job hunting. All the more reason to have a competitive edge with job searching, cover letters, resumes, and interviews. Today, Rich Lukish, author of Secrets of Getting Hired, shares his years of experience as a corporate CEO and HR consultant with the details and fine points of how to get in the door and how to get hired. Rich, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Bricky.
I gather that the job market really is as bad as people fear, that there's several times more applicants for every job.
It has gotten very serious over the last 4 to 5 months. I do recruiting for clients, and the early part of 2008, we would probably receive around 40 to 50 resumes for a given position we advertised. By the summer, that was increasing to 150, and by the fall of this year, we were clearly getting 200 to 300 resumes for an advertised position.
Wow, so the moral of the story is you've got to have a competitive edge. You've got to figure out how to stand out from the others. One of the fascinating things you talked about was that the interviewers typically think they're brilliant at selecting really good people, and the research doesn't support that?
Clearly, the research does not support that. A University of Michigan study by a Dr. Hunter some years ago identified that the typical interview is about 57% accurate in identifying who will be a good performer. And his conclusion was basically flipping a coin would be just as good as going through the typical interview.
So business could save an enormous amount of money by laying off the interviewers and just randomly selecting people.
That's really a great idea. Fortunately, a lot of the interviewers make the number one, what's called the number one mistake in hiring new employees, which is over-relying on the interaction or the chemistry between the two parties during a typical employment interview. And there's an old recruiting adage that says that if you as a candidate go into an interview and you can display at least three of the following four A attributes, and you can display them successfully, you'll win the job. And the four attributes are aggressive, amiable, articulate, and attractive. So if I'm going into an interview for a sales position, and I can relay in the interview how aggressive I am, I'm friendly, I'm amiable, I'm relatively articulate, I may not be particularly handsome, but I'm dressed well for the job, chances are, if I can click on at least three of those four A attributes, I will impress the interviewer enough and outposition the other candidate.
So we could wail and complain about how wrong that is because, as you said, it doesn't improve the results. But the reality is if you want to get hired, you want to score high on those four A's.
Exactly. And even with interviewers who are well-trained and have a strong interviewing format, those four A attributes are very critical to that interaction during the interview.
Besides the ways that people normally think of for job hunting, checking online sources and newspapers, what are some unusual ways that people can find information about jobs that maybe aren't posted or other people don't normally think of?
Well, that's really a good question. The research typically shows that for management positions, only about 20% of those positions are ever advertised. And as you sort of go down the scale to non-management positions, only about 45% of those are ever advertised. So the reality is that better than 50% of positions are never advertised, and typically they are found in one of three ways. First one would be referrals from friends and family members and so on, and other business associates. The second would be a direct mail solicitation where you are actually sending out direct mail pieces to a targeted audience, requesting interviews and presenting your information. And the third option would be recruiters, placing your resume with headhunters, search firms in that fashion.
When you say direct mail, I'm picturing all these little postcards, the junk mail that you get, and I'm saying, oh my goodness. I gather that's not quite what you mean by direct mail.
No, but it's sort of the same concept. Traditional direct mail pieces that you consider junk mail when you get them in the mail, traditional direct mail pieces generally have a 0.5 to maybe 1% return. And what that means is if you send out 100 resumes and cover letters to a targeted audience, chances are you might get a call from one person. In my book, what I recommend to individuals is that they use a four-step direct mail process where they create three separate letters and they send a letter out about 3 to 5 days apart. Each letter would be slightly different than the previous one, and then the fourth step of the process would be to call the targeted person, the hiring manager or president of the company, as the fourth step. Typically, direct mail pieces with that four-step process have anywhere from a 2 to 5% positive return. So if you're going to send out 100 resumes, chances are pretty good you're going to get 2 to 5 responses from a four-step process like that.
That's pretty impressive. One of your tenets is you don't send out something to whom it may concern or to your HR director. How do you, or do you do that with the direct mail? How do you get the names to send them to?
Typically with direct mail, what I do, and this is even how I solicit clients here in my particular geographic area, my target market is small to mid-sized employers. So what I typically do is I either go to the library or I buy a commercially prepared list, and your public library has a whole bunch of wonderful free resources that will give you names of the company, the name of the CEO, targeted other positions including human resource manager names and so on, as well as the website where you can go onto the website and find information. But in the absence of actually finding somebody specific, you want to try to personalize your letter as much as possible. So if you're sending a letter in for a plant manager position and it's an advertised position and you simply cannot find the name of the person to send your resume to, then you would want to say in your introduction or your salutation, you know, dear hiring manager for plant manager position. It at least gives the person who's receiving that resume and specifically that cover letter information or the sense that you've attempted to personalize your cover letter. And I've got to say, in today's business environment, just simply sending a cover letter seems to be a lost art. But the more you can personalize it, the better you're going to be.
One of the interesting things that you talk about is often you want to send your letter or materials to the CEO as opposed to the HR person. Why is that, and do you want to do that with direct mail or just when you've honed in on a specific job?
The primary reason for that is, and as a human resource consultant, my first job out of college in 1972 was as a human resource manager. We called it personnel administration back then. Typically, the HR department in organizations tends to be a black hole. If you send your resume or cover letter to the CEO or to the specific hiring manager for the department that you want to be employed in, chances are when that person takes your resume and cover letter to the human resource department, it will have more weight and it will have already been seen by somebody of importance than if the letter just goes to the HR department directly. So I certainly, whenever possible, I recommend that finding the name of the person or, in the absence of that, sending the letter to the CEO. When something comes from the CEO's desk, it always has more weight than if it just came through the mail to the HR manager directly.
So most CEOs aren't just tossing those in the wastebasket, but they're pretty routinely passing them on?
Yes, there are legal requirements now. Employers are required, non-federal contractors are required to keep resumes, unsolicited or solicited, resumes and cover letters and job applications for a minimum of a year. Federal contractors have to keep it for 2 years. So there is a legal requirement for doing that that has some weight to it.
Now, you really focus on targeting small employers. Is that because the vast majority of jobs are there?
Quite honestly, the answer is yes. I was looking at, and in my book I have some information about the 2004 U.S. Census. And in 2004, nationwide, we had 4.9 million firms that employed anywhere from 1 to 99 employees. We had roughly almost 87,000 firms that employed anywhere from 100 to 499 employees. And then there were 17,000, slightly more than that, mega firms like Citibank and General Motors that employ anywhere from 500 up to 10,000, 20,000, 30,000. So the reality is, if you're looking for a specific target market, and if you're looking for a job, looking at all of the big guys at this point in time, that group of 17,000 firms, is going to make, in my opinion, is going to make your search that much tougher, because they are going to be inundated with everybody who wants to send their resume, because that's where they think the jobs are. My opinion, the easiest target market, the low-hanging fruit, are the 4.9 million firms that employ anywhere from 1 to 99 employees. These are the small employers of the world, and these are the people who will most often appreciate a direct mail piece, an aggressive letter, somebody who really pays attention to the details of finding the job in their particular company.
And you'd have the additional benefit of knowing what city you're talking about in most cases.
Exactly. And again, all that information is free at the public library instead of having to buy a specific list.
Can you give me some examples of the titles of the books at the public library?
My public library here in my particular area, in the reference department, has an online service where they are tapped into a company that I routinely buy my mailing list from, InfoUSA. Now, when I buy my list from InfoUSA, I say, I want employers with 25 to 99 employees in Chester County, Pennsylvania, with sales in the following area, and I want to exclude the following types of organizations, restaurants and hotels and so on. So I can be more specific when I'm actually paying $600 or $700 for a specific list. At the library, you'll be able to go on the reference desk, and with the help of one of the reference desk assistants, be able to download, I believe they, at least in my library here, you can download up to 25 names at a time and get that information right there that I would normally have to pay for.
Can't beat free.
I agree.
We'll get back to Rich in just a moment. I often have people ask me what supplements I take. I take several. The two that I most faithfully take are Zone Labs Omega RX Fish Oil and Zone Labs Sea Health Plus. Recommended by the American Heart Association, fish oil is vital to reducing inflammation, getting enough omega-3 fats, and protecting your heart and cardiovascular system. But just any old fish oil won't do, because the inexpensive brands often contain lead, mercury, PCBs, and they easily oxidize. The leading researcher on fish oil is Dr. Barry Sears, who spent decades studying, refining, and perfecting fish oil. Dr. Sears' Omega RX fish oil is the gold standard of fish oil. It starts with carefully selected small fish, goes through a rigid system of refining and refining again, and every batch is tested for quality. Sea Health Plus is Dr. Sears' meticulously researched and produced extracts from fruits and vegetables and trace minerals to fight inflammation, disease, and aging. I'm delighted to have Dr. Sears' Zone Labs as a sponsor, and delighted to offer a limited-time 10% discount on your first order. There's a lot going on in ZoneDiet.com website. My recommendation, click the Customize Solution button, and unless you're an elite athlete, select Omega RX Fish Oil and Sea Health Plus, and then you can get three of Dr. Sears' books for free and the 10% discount when you use the promotional code AGELESS. Or you can call 1-800-404-8171 and use the promotional code AGELESS. That number again is 1-800-404-8171 or the website zonediet.com. And now back to Rich Lukash. You mentioned the lost art of cover letters, and you distinguish between what type of employer you're talking about. So for these small employers who probably aren't doing keyword scanning, what's a cover letter need to look like?
Well, one of the concepts that I use for the cover letter and for the resume is a direct mail concept known as above the fold. And if you think of your typical, what you might call junk mail that you get in at your home, as you pull an item out of an envelope, the first 3 to 5 inches of printed material that you see that's above the first fold of that document is the material that needs to grab your attention. And especially in t- today's employment market, we probably have anywhere from 5 to 10 seconds to grab a hiring manager's attention with the words on our resume and our cover letter, because when you're getting 300 and 400 resumes, how do you decide who gets in, who gets out? So you have that short window of opportunity in order to do that. So I concentrate on a couple of techniques specifically with the cover letter relative to the above-the-fold strategy, such as I have a cover letter where I have a headline in it. The headline might sound something like this: underutilized assets are costing your organization 19% a year. Now, very seldom do you see headlines like that in a cover letter. Most cover letters to employers are the address, the salutation, some basic information about the person, and then the letter closes. In today's market, especially people today, we tend to be scanners and skimmers. People today will buy a novel, read chapter one, read the last chapter, and then decide to go back and decide whether they want to read the book or not. Well, that's how people look at resumes. So if you have a headline that grabs attention, and at a minimum a PS or postscript at the bottom, that both items of which sell you and sell your value as an employee, chances are very good that most readers of cover letters will read the headline, read the PS at the bottom, and then decide whether to go back and read the cover letter or go right onto your resume. So those are two tactics that I recommend for the cover letter.
So the same process we go through when we go through our junk mail of a couple seconds looking at what first pops out of the envelope, the above the fold, and then making a decision whether to read more. It's very similar to what we do with newspapers. You look at the headline. I love the idea of headlines, and when I coach people on speaking, I encourage them to start their speeches with a headline. But the headlines that you're talking about, it kind of jolt me a little bit of, gee, this, I haven't seen any cover letters this way. I haven't seen any resumes with headlines. Are some employers going to look at that and say, oh, this is so gimmicky?
No, I don't believe they will. And in my book, I have two approaches. One is a traditional format, and one is a slightly more aggressive format. The traditional format has the typical address, name, address of the person. And if you've seen letters from attorneys, right underneath the address, they'll have a capital R, capital E with a colon, words to say regarding.
Mm-hmm.
You can put your headline in there and look very business or professional-like. For some cover letters, I've actually removed the actual address and just started it. Put the headline in there first, such as your underutilized assets are costing you 19% a year, and then start the salutation, Dear Dr. Bricky. And then use an approach on the cover letter that's one of three combinations, sort of a problem agitate solution approach, a prediction solution approach, or a winners-losers comparison and solution approach, all three of which present the solution as you, the candidate.
And the headlines are really the old What's in it for me radio station, that you're solving a problem for the employer, and that's why he's going to care and want to read more.
Exactly. Just to give you an example, I get probably over a dozen magazines here in my office, and just the other day I was looking at CFO magazine, Chief Financial Officer magazine, and I wrote down a couple of headlines here. One is talent enough? That was a headline of an article. And underneath that was the subheading of, I believe talent helps, but it will never take you as far as passion. I wrote that down as a possible great headline for one of my individuals that I will subsequently write a resume and cover letter for.
Mm-hmm.
I get another magazine, the American Production and Inventory Control Society, that they have an article, and articles offer, newspaper articles, magazine articles, can offer the best headlines. They have an article, Do You Measure Up? Managers Must Do More Than Just Hanging Around. I think the headlines that are there are not over the top, are not overly aggressive, but they are attention grabbing, and then the body of the letter has to sell the rest of it.
I think if you're looking for jobs, one of the hobbies should be looking for great headlines, and look for it everywhere. Even if you're in the checkout line of the grocery store, see what the National Enquirer is doing to get people to spend $5 on that magazine. That same kind of process is what hooks the employer on taking a look at your cover letter, and that's the foot in the door to read the rest and to read the resume and so on.
That's a great example. Standing in the checkout line, reading all the tabloids, they have some great headlines.
The biggest problem I have with that is resisting buying the dumb magazine. But anything else on what to put in that cover letter for the small employer?
Yes. One of the things that I like to recommend to individuals is that they offer what I call an ethical bribe. Now, what that is, if you've ever had a salesperson buy you lunch or buy you a round of golf or give you tickets to a ball game or something like that, that is what in the industry is known as an ethical bribe. Well, I have yet to see any candidates for employment who offer those types of ethical bribes or those types of gifts or offerings as a way to get their foot in the door. Now, it doesn't have to be anything excessive. It could simply be a copy of an article that you've written, an outline or something that you've produced, a spreadsheet that you created, obviously nothing proprietary from a former employer. But if you have something of value that you can offer that employer, specifically for the smaller employers, the entrepreneurs of the world who understand risk and understand reward and understand aggressive behavior, that will put you heads and shoulders above individuals. Give you a quick example. In 2007, I had a friend of mine who was an engineer and having difficulty finding a job. I helped him write his cover letter, and what I said to him is, in the cover letter, since you are currently unemployed, we're going to make an offer to the employer that you're going to volunteer your time, that you are so confident about your skills and the value you can deliver to that employer, that you're going to volunteer 3 days of your time, no expense to the employer, to prove how valuable you are. We sent that resume and cover letter out on Tuesday. He was called Wednesday afternoon, interviewed Thursday, got the job Thursday morning, and never had to volunteer for the 3 days.
I love this, and what a great way to stand out. Some of the things just came to my mind. Well, certainly if you've written a book, even if it's an e-book, that would be a great freebie that would really make you stand out. I'm thinking of some of the kinds of things that Dan Kennedy does, of maybe giving them a golf ball, or you can go to the bank and get crisp new $2 bills or a garbage bag or a garbage can or something with some interesting little story about how you're going to help them clean up the waste in their department.
That's a great point, because having some fun with this, I always like individuals who want to have a little bit of fun. If you're very, very serious, sometimes that works against you. But using that garbage can analogy or being able to send a little gift like that along with your resume shows that you're a little lighthearted and speaks well for you.
Not only fun, but it suggests creativity and it makes you stand out and be memorable, because these guys are getting maybe hundreds of resumes and they're going to remember that stupid golf ball.
Yes.
And yep. We're talking about small enough amounts of money that nobody's going to see it as a bribe.
Exactly. And speaking of Dan Kennedy, one of his techniques that I use in the resume and cover letter is most people will try to attach their references to a resume or a cover letter. What I like to do is to use snippets or parts of sentences of a resume and put that, of a reference and or even of a former performance evaluation, and use parts of that in the resume or the cover letter as people use testimonials in the info marketing world. And that's one of the other techniques that I recommend to individuals for the resume and for the cover letter.
We've become a world of testimonials. It's amazing how it seems like just in the last 10 years, anything that you try to sell has got to have testimonials.
Yes. Testimonials and some other trust factors. So one of the things, depending on the position, I have occasionally recommended to individuals that they put their picture on their cover letter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the trust factors in the info marketing and direct marketing world is getting a sense that you know the person with testimonials and pictures and things that they can identify. So depending on the position, I may recommend putting a picture on your cover letter. And in today's day and age, regardless of what our age is, I'm 58, I would need probably a little bit of touch up on that picture, which is easy to do in today's environment.
I'm wondering, since everybody who does that is going to have the basic headshot, maybe an action of you giving a speech or leading a discussion or some leadership role would be even more impressive.
Absolutely. If you have someone videotape you in a conference or a speech that you've given and you've got it on your own website or you've got it on YouTube, being able to provide an employer with that information that they could go to, that specific link, and actually see you in action can do wonders for putting you ahead and out-positioning you compared to the other candidate.
And it's really easy to just slip in a CD or a DVD or something like that. We're talking with Rich Lukash, author of Secrets of Getting Hired, and got a special treat for you. You can get a free copy of his book, Secrets of Getting Hired. There's no strings or tricks. It's an ebook, and all you have to do is go to secretstogettinghired.com. That's secretstogettinghired.com, and type in your name and your email address, and you can download it, and it's, what, 120-some pages of the kind of information that we're talking about now. Rich, besides this ebook, you also do a lot of consulting with companies trying to kind of outsource their HR department. How does that work?
Yes, my primary business is human resource consulting for small to mid-sized companies that cannot afford their own full-time HR manager. So it's myself and two employees who work for me. We go in on either every other week or weekly basis for anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a day to be the on-site HR department for that organization. We also, during the week, handle any other emergencies that come up for the company. But for small employers, having someone come in 4 hours a week, every week or every other week, is all that they really need from a human resource perspective to keep legally compliant with all of the labor laws that are currently in effect and maintaining all of the interviewing and other activities that we need to do, disciplinary action stuff that's required for that organization.
It strikes me that some employees might regard that as a wonderful improvement in quality as opposed to the do-it-yourself. Or some of them might say, this is kind of a stealth HR department. I don't have somebody that I can walk down the hall and talk to.
Yes, it's great to have somebody who's there on a regular basis that they know is going to be showing up. But they also have access, the employees also have access to us privately through phone calls during the evening or off times where they can speak to us confidentially if they don't feel that doing so in the office is appropriate. Having that HR function there for small employers is absolutely critical. Human resources plays that sort of middle of the road between management and the employee, giving advice to both sides, and we often resolve a number of interpersonal conflicts within the organization that tremendously improve productivity without anybody even knowing it.
That's a whole fascinating subject that personally I'd love to talk about, but we're trying to focus today on people who need to get jobs, so I'm going to take you back to cover letters. We talked about the small employers that aren't keyword scanning. How do you know when an employer's likely to be using keyword scanning, and what do you do differently?
Generally speaking, the employers will, if they're advertising a position, they will request that you send a scannable resume. And in my free book, there are instructions in the book as to how to create that scannable resume. And some of those employers will have their own, some of the more sophisticated employers may have an actual website where you need to copy and paste your information into their format. Mm-hmm. And generally when you find that, you can safely assume that if they're sophisticated enough to have you copy and paste information into their format, that they're going to be using scannable keyword software which identifies individuals by the keywords that they are looking, that the company is looking for. So one of the things you need to do in your resume and cover letter is be sure that you use those keywords as much as possible and that you have a section of your resume that identifies a number of keywords that are appropriate for the position you're looking for so that you can be sort of tagged and pulled out of the rest of the group.
So if you had a job advertisement, you'd go through and kind of underline the words that seem most important, and those are your keywords?
Yes, correct. And that's very important, especially for federal government positions, because they generally list their material quite extensively in the advertisement. What's interesting about the federal government is very, very seldom do they ever use keyword scanning software. So just about 100% of the time, people in the federal government will be an actual body who's looking at your resume. So if you're not meeting the things that were listed in the ad itself, chances are you're going to be put on the do not call list.
And I would expect the federal government to be a little more concrete-minded in the way that they look at those resumes.
They certainly are. They certainly are.
Well, we talked about some ways of being creative with the cover letter. What are some of the other things people do that make them boring?
Boring. The boring stuff comes in specifically, I would say, on the cover letter with just having the standard information. I saw your ad in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I'm submitting my resume, and just repeating, but in different words, the same stuff that is on your resume, repeating that in different words on the cover letter.
Is it almost go through and X out anything that doesn't have to be there?
Yes.
Including
people
the inside
really
address.
People really don't have time for long, lengthy stories or boring information. One of the things on the resume is you'll often see a section of the resume that's entitled summary or objective, and it has a whole bunch of what I would call keywords that are primarily cliches and meaningless statements like highly motivated, results-oriented, proven track record. And quite honestly, as somebody who reviews resumes for employers, just about every resume I get has all of those keywords. It's hard to find anybody who doesn't have a solid track record or who's not results-oriented or a fast learner. So as a result, those words don't even mean anything to us anymore.
I want to emphasize what you said about the PS. The headline and the PS get the most attention, and I don't think people realize that the PS does. So what do you want to put in a PS?
You want to additionally use the PS to sell your strengths or offer that thing of value that you have. So if you're going to be offering 3 days or 5 days of free service as proof of the skills and the quality and the value that you can deliver to that employer, between the headline and the PS, those are the two things that you want to grab the attention of the reader with.
In the close of the letter, are you going to say something like, you know, call me or I'll call you, or how do you wrap it up?
What I recommend is wrapping it up without a threat. And when you say, I'll be calling you next week, blah, 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 in sort of a comical way, I call that a quote-unquote threat that you're gonna do something. Whether you have that in the close or not is not going to prevent you from calling that person next week for an interview. What I recommend you do as part of the letter, at the end of the letter, is do what I might call a takeaway or suggest a certain amount of scarcity. For example, in the closing of the letter, you might want to say, thank you for taking the opportunity to review my material. Over the next 2 weeks, I have a number of interviews scheduled. However, I'm very interested in working with your organization. Please call me as soon as possible if you have an interest in interviewing over the next 2 weeks, as I would be willing to change some of my prior commitments. I want to suggest to that employer that despite the unemployment rate at 7.whatever%, I'm still in demand and I've got interviews scheduled. So if you're interested in me and you like what I've written here in the cover letter and the resume, call me because I can make arrangements and rearrange some of my interviews.
I love it. I contacted you to tell you I'm hard to get.
Yes.
We'll get back to Rick Lukacs in just a moment. I knew from increasingly convergent sources that inflammation is the key to most chronic diseases, including heart disease, arthritis, diabetes, and obesity. When I read Dr. Barry Sears' bestseller, Toxic Fat, and when I interviewed Dr. Sears, I was amazed at how his meticulous research tied it all together. Dr. Sears is the developer of the Zone Diet and has been studying metabolism, healthy eating, and fish oil for decades. The centerpiece of his research is his Omega RX fish oil supplements. Nobody has studied fish oil more, and no one is more conscientious about carefully selecting small cod, refining them again, and testing every single batch. You can't get safer, better, more potent fish oil anywhere. Its companion is Sea Health Plus, fruit and vegetable and trace mineral extracts in an optimally absorbable form to counter free radicals, inflammation, disease, and aging. I'm delighted to have Dr. Sears' Zone Labs as a sponsor and delighted to offer you a limited time 10% discount on your first order of his Zone Health and Weight Loss products. Just use the promotional code AGELESS. There's a lot on the ZoneDiet.com website. My recommendation, click the Customize Solution button, and unless you're an elite athlete, select Omega RX Fish Oil and the Sea Health Plus, and get three of Dr. Sears' books free and the 10% discount when you use the promotional code AGELESS. Or you can call 1-800-404-8171 and use the promotional code AGELESS. That number again is 1-800-404-8171. And now back to Rich Lukacs. Conventional advice over the years has said shorter resumes, and you say long copy.
Yes, long copy sells. If it takes you 4 pages to say what it is that you need to say in your resume, I say take 4 pages. Take 5 pages if you need, just make sure that we're saying it well. What the problem today is, people are trying to jam into 2 pages, and I'm not exactly sure where that 2-page thing came from, but people are trying to jam into 2 pages 25 or 30 years of employment, and it's very, very difficult to do. Now, quite honestly, on resumes, I certainly recommend for employment that's like 20 years ago that you have you just sort of summarize that material in a section that might be referred to as prior previous experience. But you want to capture your most recent experience, at least 10, 15, 20 years of your recent experience, and be able to expand on that significantly, identifying your accomplishments and your responsibilities to really show the employer how valuable you are as to his or her organization.
I see all these articles about novel ways to do resumes, and we're talking about trying to be creative and novel, but you say when it comes to the layout of it, forget about functional and achievement and letter and everything, just good old reverse chronological order.
Yes, most of us in the industry today, whenever we see a resume that is not a reverse chronological resume, which simply means your current or last employer is at first on the page, your next employer is follows that, and so on. Whenever we see a resume that's not a reverse chronological resume, we assume that someone is trying to hide something. And in today's environment, generally, if I have to work really hard to find out on a functional resume or an accomplishment resume where that accomplishment went with what position, if you're making me work hard, chances are you're going to go on the do not call list. So I recommend to individuals that you use a reverse chronological resume. And if you've got gaps in employment or problems with your with prior employment, that you address those things head-on in the cover letter and address them head-on in the resume with the format that I recommend to individuals.
Does it make sense to have like a one-page summary and then a lengthier resume so that somebody who wants to get the picture and know whether they want to drill down or not can do that?
A one-page summary that then directs somebody to a website with your resume?
No, a one-page summary and then a complete resume.
And a complete resume. I have not seen that. The cover letter is, from my perspective, the cover letter is going to be that summary or that attention grabber, and then the resume is going to be the detail behind that. So my tendency is to have somebody write the cover letter and then the resume without a separate additional summary. But I have seen that used successfully, I must say.
Particularly for people who have academic backgrounds, they a lot of times they'll expect these, you know, every publication you've ever written, and yet nobody wants to read that unless they're sure that they want to read that. When we get to the interview, one of the things I really liked about what you said is you're not there to just answer the question and then when they run out of questions, it's done, shake their hand and leave. You want to have some stories in mind and look for opportunities to tell those stories. What kind of stories are we talking about?
Well, what I recommend to individuals and what folks need to understand is that the interview is actually a sales presentation. And there are really three elements to a sales presentation. The first is preparation. The second one is the actual format or process that you use at the sales meeting or at the interview. And the third step is being able to use handouts, strategically use handouts, to outposition yourself better and outposition other candidates using what I call the FUD factor, or fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So what I recommend to individuals is part of the preparation is that they sit down very quietly, number one, and visualize the various questions that are going to be asked by the interviewer, and they actually visualize themselves answering the questions, articulating what their answers are, even thinking of what clothes they're wearing, what hand or facial movements that they're going to be making at certain points of the conversation. It's just like an actor who's rehearsing for a play or for a movie. If you don't have the scripts rehearsed well, you're going to do very poorly. I have seen some very senior executives sound like absolute rookies when they go into an interview because the actual knowledge or knowing something and being able to verbally express something are two different skill sets. So I tell individuals, I use an acronym known as SAR, S-A-R, where I ask individuals that depending on the question that they are asked, they need to develop a list of stories or a series of stories, because people will remember stories far longer than they'll remember data or facts. And SAR is an acronym for Situation, Action, Results. So if I ask you a question about a particular achievement that you had, you want to tell me in a 1 to 3 minute time frame what the situation was, what action you took, and what results you achieved. And really limit it to 3 minutes. Don't get very windy on that type of answer.
What I love about this is instead of it being their show, you're going into it with the mindset of this is my show and this is how I'm going to orchestrate it. Granted, I'm going to be nimble and adjust as things develop, but I know what I want to try to do, and I'm ready to do my show if they let me.
Yes, exactly.
That is slick.
One of the things you need to be careful of is that you don't sort of make it appear as though you're commandeering or taking control of the interview. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have the interviewer understand that he or she is in control. But there are selected sales techniques and strategies that I recommend. I mean, most interviewers, after they say to you, so tell me about yourself, they're really stuck for any other good questions to ask. So basically at that point, you have the stage. And once you have that stage, you can then direct in the conversation however you want.
What do you do if they ask illegal questions?
I recommend that you answer the illegal questions. And those illegal questions might be, what is your ethnic background? I notice your name is, and describe your name, and what ethnicity is that? Or what church do you belong to? There are employers who will ask illegal questions many times just to stress individuals. There are some employers who will actually purposely put you under stress test or stress interview type environments. I consider those questions that type of environment. Here's my recommendation. Answer the questions straight out. Don't be offended by the question. Just deal with it. If you don't get the job and you feel you've been discriminated against, you can always file a charge of discrimination. But at the very least, show that you're open, you're honest, and that you're not afraid to answer specific questions. I think that will do more for you and speak better for you than simply saying that's an illegal question or bristling at the thought of being able to answer something like that.
I'm surprised that employers are asking them, because I would think that would be a big risk for them.
It would, but in all honesty, that 4.9 million employers who are the entrepreneurs of the world, who employ anywhere from 1 to 99 employees, have very, very little formal management training. And a lot of them who I work with, not all 4.9 million, but a lot of them who I work with are really good people at their heart. They actually get themselves tongue-tied and tied up in questions. and they actually stray into illegal areas without even knowing it. An astute candidate could probably pick that up. My recommendation is, in most cases that I've seen, every case that I've seen, it's an innocent question that's asked. Geez, how many children do you have? By virtue of the fact that a person said, my wife or my husband did this or that, and the interviewer, who was generally very poor at asking questions anyway, says, oh, and do you have any children? Innocent question, but certainly one that's not appropriate in today's legal environment.
Some of the interesting subtleties you talk about, if you're sending them a file, it's important how you name that file. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. What's interesting here is that when you email your resume and cover letter, and when most people create their resume and cover letter on the hard drive of their computer, they will title it resume or they will title it cover letter. So that when they upload that into their email and they send it to someone else, like me, someone who's recruiting for a client, and I'm in a hurry and I'm downloading a whole bunch of these files to my hard drive, if I have 5 individuals or 10 individuals who have a resume titled resume, and I download each one, I could have end up accidentally replacing ones that I've already downloaded by the same file name. So what I recommend to individuals is that you create a file name for your resume and your cover letter that at the very minimum has some portions of your name, like my name is Rich Lukish, I might say R. Lukish. And then the next portion of it might say resume, and if I'm going as for an engineer position, R. Lukish, resume, engineer. Or some combination of words like that, that my information will stand out when they look at their hard drive and they decide to open up various resumes.
And people often make mistakes on their email address. If your email address is hotstuff@yahoo.com, you're not going to be very hot stuff to them. And if it's at Hotmail, they're going to probably see that as not very professional either.
Oh, clearly. I mean, I have gotten some absolutely wild email addresses that had sexual overtones, political overtones, religious overtones, you name it. My recommendation to individuals is to stay as neutral as possible. You know, having an email address that says Hot Mama or Babe Magnet or something like that, in today's environment where sexual harassment, the word sexual harassment just roll off people's lips in today's world, as an employer, do I want to hire somebody who thinks he or she he's a babe magnet into a work environment where I have female employees? Chances are not. So I recommend get email addresses are free. Get one. Get it neutral. Put your job title in it. You know, R. Lukish, plant manager. Whatever you want to do at hotmail.com. There are any number of ways to distinguish yourself without having, you know, some suggestive format.
So we'll save those for Abercrombie and Fitch.
And all your friends. And I've got to say as well, speaking of that, when you have your answering machine on or your voicemail, during your job search, you need to be professional. A few years ago, I called up an IT person. This was back in 2007. And he had his answering machine as a heavy metal band singing I Hate Work. I lasted about 20 seconds and hung up. Now, he called me back because he was monitoring his calls. And when he did that, he said, did you just call me? And I said, who are you? And we kind of matched up the information. And I let him have it. He was a young kid in his 20s. I probably violated 2 or 3 labor laws in the process. But I just had to tell him. I said, son, you're never going to get an employer who's going to leave a message for you if you have a rock band singing I Hate Work. The next day he had a more professional answering message.
Your good deed. So many people live on their cell phones. They love their cell phones, but the quality of the transmission just isn't as good. I would think that one of the things you want to do is, if it's at all possible, use a landline.
You are absolutely correct. I have had people that I've tried to interview as they were walking down a street, in people who were in restaurants. It's amazing how much of that extraneous noise that your cell phone actually picks up. And my recommendation to you is, whenever possible, let your answering machine or your voicemail, which is an appropriate voicemail, capture the information, or if you feel that you need to take that message, whenever possible, say to the person, I've got another phone call coming through shortly. Please give me your name and your phone number and your company and your information, and I'll call you back sometime later today. Because the last thing you want to do is take an interview over the phone when you're not prepared, especially if you've used different resumes or different cover letters that were sent to different employers. You want to be prepared for that interview.
And on top of that, you sound hard to get.
Yes, exactly. That's scarcity again.
We're talking with Rich Lukish, author of Secrets of Getting Hired, and you can get a free copy of it, download a free copy of the ebook at secretstogettinghired.com. That's secretstogettinghired.com. And it's a 120-some-page ebook with the kind of stuff that we've been talking about today. So if you liked what we're talking about today, this is where you get it. Why is he doing this? Well, there's links in there that if you want to drill down and get even more services, or if you want Rich to help you with a resume or something, that's available. But the book is no strings. It's a very well-done book and very good advice. Rich, I thank you, and you've probably got quite a few people more successful at getting jobs, and so you did your good deed today.
Thank you, Dr. Bricky.
Commentary. I previously interviewed Beth Baker, Brad Taft, and Dr. Helen Harkness on career issues, and you can find those shows archived on agelesslifestyles.com. They tended to focus on the big picture of what career to pursue and networking and job hunting. While Rich Lukish also looks at the big picture, today, and in his free ebook, he focuses on the small to mid-sized employers and zooms down to the nitty-gritty mechanics, such as cover letters and resumes and email addresses and file names and interviews. He shifts your mindset from being an applicant to being a marketer and a salesman. The bad news is that the recession has caused the job market to be grimly competitive. The good news is that Rich Lukish's advice gives you a big competitive advantage. Since we covered a lot, let me review some of his recommendations. First, target small to mid-sized companies. There's much less competition there. If you don't have enough prospects, you can go to the library, check out InfoUSA on their computers, and you can get a list of employers that fit your criteria. Then you can do a four-step direct mail campaign, which should give you 2 to 5 responses for every 100 employers you contact. On cover letters, he says, take a tip from advertisers. You want the material, quote, above the fold when you first unfold that letter to be captivating and to make the person want to read more. You may even want to go for a headline that captures people's attention. And you might want to use a formula such as suggest a problem, agitate the problem, and then suggest yourself as the solution. Since you may be competing against dozens or even hundreds of other applicants, you want to look for chances to do value-added things such as including an article or book that you wrote, or possibly even a gimmick such as a golf ball or a garbage can or something to make a memorable point and show that you have creativity and humor. You don't have to limit yourself to references. You can include testimonials, and it can be very effective to have your picture on the resume or on the cover letter. It gives them a sense that they know you as a person. Personally, I also suggest making that an action picture instead of the usual face shot. When people are quickly reading letters or scanning letters, they look at the headline or the first sentence or so and often skip right down to the PS. So you want to include a PS. You want it to be a strong PS selling yourself. And in closing your letter, you may want to suggest some scarcity that you're a little in demand and hard to get. When you get to the interview, you don't want to see yourself as just a person applying for a job. You want to see yourself as a salesperson. You want to have some stories in mind, some points that you want to make, and as the opportunities present themselves, for you to sell yourself rather than just respond to questions. All in all, I think Rich's advice is right on. If you can't remember everything we talked about and you wish you could, No problem. Just download his free ebook at secretstogettinghired.com. Emails. I love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Last week's show with Barbara Bellman on flirting prompted a lot of flirtatious responses and stories from listeners about meeting the love of their life by screwing up their courage and breaking the ice with a flirtatious remark. Keep in mind that if you're 60 and flirting with somebody 20 or 30, it will probably come across inappropriate if it has amorous overtones to it. Those age differences call for friendly, playful conversation with no amorous edge. But for the vast majority of people over 50, somebody flirting with them is as welcome as getting carded when you're buying alcohol. I'd like to remind you to take advantage of our promotional offer and get Dr. Sears' premier products, his Omega RX Fish Oil and Sea Health Plus, and you can also get 3 free books and the 10% discount. Just go to zonediet.com and click on the Customize button. If you're interested in my books and hypnosis CDs and speaking services and coaching services, you can go to notaging.com, notaging.com, or drbricke.com, drbricke.com. This is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricke, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.